It's 7-11 brought to you by Good Game St. James. Pig inseminators rejoice. No longer do you need to wank more pork alone in the sty.
Hurrah!
Now you can ank more pork with your friends and they'll love you for it.
That's fresh, great.
From last fortnight where we talked about the colours of magic, we're back to talk about the colour of magic. Another Terry Pratchett related nonsense. No more draft matter. We've got Rincewind and other fragrant topics to discuss. You kind of have to be a regular listener to get that joke, don't you?
Yeah, that's a deep joke from the last episode, the draft matters one.
Yeah. So, everyone loves bacon, even our vegan friends. Mm. But more pork has less to do with pigs and more to do with turtles.
That's an odd sentence. I think that's the first time anyone has uttered that sentence ever.
Discworld, I was thinking if our vegan friends do like bacon, they just like it still attached to the pig.
Yeah.
So
it's still bacon.
So in your face, vegan friends who are about to write a letter.
You know you all love bacon.
Yeah. Everybody loves bacon.
Just living.
Yeah. Discworld is a fictitious place resting on the back of four giant elephants perched atop the Great Atuan, which is a turtle. It was written by Terry Pratchett, not to be confused with Terry Hatcher, who is one of the delightful brunettes from The Desperate Housewives. No, it was Pratchett who wrote The Colour of Magic in 1983 and introduced 80 million of us to Discworld.
What did Terry Hatcher do?
Superman.
She was Lois Lane.
Yeah, there you go. Sadly for Terry Pratchett, until the 1990s, the series of novels, which have been 40 in total, made him the highest-selling UK author in history. Now, it was right before he was eclipsed by something that a J.K. Rowling did something.
I think it's Jack Rowling.
Jack Rowling.
Yeah.
So Ankh Morpork is a city in Discworld. Several Discworld locations have been twinned with real-world towns and cities. Wincanton in Somerset, UK, for example, is twinned with Ankh Morpork, and the town is the first to name streets after its fictional counterpart.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
oh,
that's nice, isn't it? But what does all this mean to gamers? To rummage through a 100-legged luggage chest, I'm joined by Ankh Aaron Graham.
You went deep on the pun that time.
Yeah. Yeah. Ankh Aaron. And more pork, Matt McHale.
I'm going to go with my favourite saying, which is get more pork on your fork.
I'd like to think of myself as Discworld David today. We can do that.
The
trifecta.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
That's a disco name.
Yeah. Discworld David.
So, gentlemen, how are we?
Yeah, very well.
We are well.
Okay.
I didn't sleep very well. I was only got about 4.5 hours. So running on caffeine today.
About half hour will be. That's what get you through this.
Yeah, the four and a half.
Yeah, if it had just been four, I'd have been worried. I'd have tools down, Osh issue, not a work safe environment. But you know, 4.5. Let's push on.
I thought he was running on fumes. At least that's what I can smell.
Caffeine fumes, farts and burps.
Rincewind. Okay, so we're doing Ankh Morpork, or is it called Discworld Ankh Morpork?
That's right.
So what is the objective of this crazy game, Matt?
It has a very, very deep objective for this game. It's many layers, like an onion. It has many layers. Actually. Yeah.
It's like a parfait. It's a Shrek reference.
Pour it on your ice cream like a nice parfait.
It's a bit of Tom Waits.
Of course.
Chocolate Jesus, Lady Gaga.
Sorry,
many layers.
The other
to
Tom
him.
Waits. Yeah.
Well, the objective is to be the first player to complete their secret objective, and screw with the other players in the process.
I like secret objectives.
Hmm.
It is,
but so, technically, the objective of the game is to complete your objective, which I think is also great.
Mm. Yeah. So the objective is different for
Don't
everybody.
Don't confuse things. We need one objective, and that's to be the first player to complete your objective.
Oh, okay. Isn't that every game?
Yeah. The objective of the game is to win.
I said it was deep.
It is deep. It's many layered.
To be happy.
Yeah.
To socialize with one's friends.
Money,
yes. Yeah. You get money. First you get the money. Then you get the power. Then you get the womang.
Then you get the woman.
Womang. Yeah.
Is that the case in this game, Matt?
Well, there are many women involved.
How many women have you got?
There are many women involved. And we'll get to those a little bit later because there are some very interesting dames that we should meet.
Mm-hmm. So the narrative of the game is obviously deeply set in Terry Pratchett's Discworld world. Because it's a franchise kind of box.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's well seeded. Yeah.
Yeah. So how does that work? How does that pan out for fans of Terry Pratchett?
Well, a popular, I'd say not necessarily popular, but a well-known character, I think, would be the Lord Vetinari, who is the ruler of Ankh Morpork. Now, according to the manual, he's missing, either presumed dead or on holiday.
Okay, so either or.
Either. So he's missing from Ankh Morpork, leaving the gates open for all the other lords to wheel their machinations and grab the burrows, the power in the burrows for themselves. So the players represent the other powerful characters competing against each other to become the new lord of the city.
And who are those? Who are the other characters that are on?
The other characters, some of the more popular ones or some of the more interesting ones, I guess. The Lord de Word.
Lord de Word.
The Lord is the Word.
Yeah,
I guess. I thought it was Lord de
Word.
Lord de Word.
Lord de Word.
Lord de Word.
Lord de Word.
Lord de Word. Lord de Ward.
Well, good mates, I guess, with Lord Salachi.
All right.
Salakai.
There we go. We can see how many of these names we can butcher. Try this one. Lord Rust.
Oh, that's pretty much
bang on, yeah.
Is that the guy from True Detective? Rust Cole.
Oh, yeah.
So well, if good. He's got not big now. Mutton chops, Victorian mutton chops, then I guess that's the case.
Then that's him, yeah.
We have the Dragon King of Arms.
Right.
That's a much cooler name than all of the other ones.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It sounds
Dragon
like
King cool. of Arms.
He neither looks like a dragon, nor does he appear to have arms. Dragony arms.
He's a king. He's in charge.
At least he's a king. That's good.
Yeah.
Now, this one... depending on where you're from in the country, Chrysophys. Commander Vimes, who a very popular character from, I think, Guards, which is one of the Pratchett novels. Okay. He's the commander of the Watch.
Ah.
Okay. And then there, of course, is the mysterious, enigmatic Lord Vetinari.
Okay. Now, they all have different objectives, isn't there? These are your objective cards, really, and you dish these out at the beginning of the game. Mm-hmm. Each of you gets one of these unbeknownst to the... Well, everyone knows everyone else is getting one, but they don't know what's on that card.
Yes, you all know you have one.
Yeah.
And everyone's expected to know what each of them could potentially do.
That's right. They've done that in a really helpful way. Cool. They've put it actually on their reference card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
this is one of the best reference cards I've seen because some games they put a lot of information on there and you're like, cool, this is all the things that I need. Like on Railways of the World, it tells you your actions, it tells you how much they all cost and stuff. But then there's some information that's just not on there. Other people's secret objectives could be, what the benefits are to doing a certain thing, and this just covers all of it. It's really good.
So like instead of picking up your own card and going, what was my objective again? Okay, putting it back down and go, I'm going to put my minion here and create some trouble.
Super subtly.
And it's like, oh, okay, that's what's good. You can sort of look at the card.
Subtly.
Pretend that you're reading someone else's stuff or looking at something else. It's all there. It's really easy to get.
Examining the font and the typeface.
Feeling the fibre of the fabric of the... this card. How thick is that? A couple of mil? Yeah, that's
just
good.
Just a little scratch on the
Lord Vetinari, what does he do?
Let me give you a taste of what these characters can do.
Go.
So the Lord Vetinari himself, he's the one who's supposedly missing, yet strangely he turns up as one of the characters.
Of course.
So he may be in the game or he may not be in the game. Mm-hmm. One of those mystery things. So if you manage to start your turn and you have minions in, if you have two players, 11 areas, or if you have three players, 10 areas, then you automatically win the game.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, at the beginning of your turn. If you are Commander Vimes and the game ends because all the cards of the player's deck run out, you win the game.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into what the player's deck and the other components are in a second.
Chrysophys, however, whatever, depends on what part of the country you're from.
He's one of the easiest ones to spot someone playing, I think.
He's a troll.
He's a troll, yeah.
He is a troll, literally.
Yeah.
I was literally a troll.
He's literally a troll.
He's a green guy.
Yeah. He's a green guy. If you start the turn and you have a combined worth of $50 or more, you win the game.
Mm-hmm. So all of these are very different.
They are. Yeah. And then there is a little bit of an overlap with some of them. Lord Roost, Lord Salachi, and Lord
De Word.
They all have similar objectives, where if at the start of your turn you manage to have control of 5 areas, you win the game.
Cool. Okay. Right.
And then the last one, the Dragon King of Arms, if at the start of your turn there are 8 or more trouble markers, and we'll get into those, then you win the game automatically.
Yeah.
So completely. A lot of variation, a lot of strategy, I think, can be played there.
Yeah, so there's not only just, you're trying to achieve those, you're also trying to spot someone else trying to do those other objectives.
And interfere
with all of that.
Yeah. I think in the game we played earlier, you seemed to have a bit of an expansionist thing happening. You were putting lots of your minions
everywhere,
all over the place. And I thought maybe, this could be Vetinari.
Yeah. Because we were thinking that because Vetinari don't need to control the areas. No, usually you need to have a majority. We'll talk about that in a minute. But so we thought he was maybe just expanding, get into as much territory as possible.
But I was really expanding just so I could move, because I had a lot of cards which allowed me, the action cards, which allowed me to move players around. So I was thinking, great, I'll move people into those areas, create trouble, and anytime anyone else wants to put a minion anywhere, if they think I'm trying to get control of an area, there's going to create trouble. So I just wanted to be as many places as I could.
So David won the game by having the 8 trouble markers, but we were contemplating between the 2 different objectives he could be going for. It was pretty difficult to in the game that we played to try and interfere. Was very powerful.
But what was interesting in that is that I actually realized towards the point of having those 8 markers on the table, like I hadn't really been watching anything else that anyone had been doing, which could be fatal in a match because you're going, oh, I'm almost there, I'm going to win this, and someone just goes, I've won.
Yeah.
I've won. I've got my $50. Yeah. And it's like, oh, man, I didn't even spot that coming.
Yeah, because you just have to be on top of every objective, including your own mostly, but you have to be aware of it.
But it's not hard to do. It's on the card. It's right there in front of you. So
if you're not paying attention, it's your own damn fault.
That's right. Go home.
Play another game.
Yeah.
Play fish.
All right. So what do we get in the box?
Components. It's a very sturdy square box, about medium size.
It is from Mayfair.
It's Mayfair, published by Mayfair Games. It's a Martin Wallace game.
Right.
So Martin Wallace.
What other games has he done?
What other games? Notable games. A lot of now single noun games. So we've got Steam.
Right.
I've heard of that one.
Brass. Yeah. Automobile. But then he
must have been pissed when they had to add the Ankh-Morpork to this one.
It's called Discworld.
Discworld.
How
do
I call it? Discworld. Ankh-Morpork. No need for Ankh-Morpork.
No. He's diversified a bit then. And later in life, he's
got 3
responsible
word
for A Few Acres of Snow, which is a very different game. And quite a heavy game.
Yeah, it's a heavy one.
It's very popular at the moment. And one of the podcast's favourite games, I have to say.
Go on.
Goes back to the trains. Okay, what do you think? What do you think it is?
Well, one of his games. Oh, it's Hell Rails. It's not Hell Rails.
No,
is it?
It's not Hell Rails.
Oh, is it
Russian?
It's not Russian Rails.
What was it, like 1912?
No.
Oh, the 18
yeah,
series.
The 1800.
No.
I'm going to burst it.
Go on.
The Last Train to Wensleydale.
Oh, my God.
That's
a Wallacer?
Yes, that's a Wallacer.
And an album by the Monkees, as we said before. Oh, fantastic.
Wensleydale.
The Discworld
the
itself.
Moon is made of Wensleydale.
So he just, the whole time he was making that game, he was just eating cheese.
Just delicious cheese.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've had Wensleydale in my life.
Yeah.
At one point. Just saying.
Yeah.
Not bragging, guys.
No.
So the fumes we can
listeners,
smell.
If you want to send in some Wensleydale to the Seven Land Hand Towers.
From Australia. Western Australia, hopefully, if it's from the other side of the world.
No, the extra mold would be good. Anyway, components. We're still getting to components.
We are. Okay. So we've got the board itself is a representation of the cities. Of the twin cities of Ankh-Morpork.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yep. Broken up into 12 different boroughs.
Yes, okay, which conveniently they have a 12-sided dice, which corresponds to that. So it would be a shame if it had been
13
boroughs. I think
that must have been coincidence.
Yeah.
Purely coincidence. 12 boroughs, 12-sided dice.
Yeah, fantastic. It's crazy.
We have the secret objective cards, which we've already talked about. The player deck, which we refer to, which are the basically the vehicle for you getting more money, spreading your minions, fucking around with other players, exactly what you do. There's a bit
the
of a screwage fact here.
Yeah.
And it's timed. There's two, even though it's one deck, the deck just
split
changed.
Into two. Yeah. There's two sets of cards for the player deck. One is the green bordered card, which... they're fairly commonplace. A lot of simple actions, but then it turns to the brown, where everything goes wrong.
Just like in life. Yeah.
Just like in life,
you can pack more of a punch, can't you? So if the game's going long, you've got more chances.
More and more ridiculous things happen.
I think that then you get more random event cards. Yeah.
It's good for the timer as well. Once you know you've started to get the brown cards, then you know you're halfway through the game.
Then
approximately.
In the brown.
That's the brown trousers time.
Yeah.
Because the deck is, what's that? It's about that.
It's like an inch. Which is,
that's like 2-3 inches. I told my wife that's about
inches.
9 inches.
Yeah.
The deck is about 9 inches. Yeah.
It's 9 inches long.
Yeah. No, the deck must be, say... 2-3 inches in height, and about halfway through half of those cards are split.
I've grown to really like that in board games. The not just shuffle all the cards together, have a predefined kind of layering to it, kind of like in Pandemic, and like in this, how it kind of steps up the intensity, and how the Pandemic one's kind of semi-randomized in the 3 or 4 sections of the deck.
Yeah.
But then I really like this kind of thing. It makes a very different play feel.
Yeah, it sort of gets exciting, doesn't it, if you get through to that.
It steps up in intensity. Yeah.
Especially if you're a Commander Vimes and you know sort of where you are. Because the objective being
that
to get through all the cards.
That went badly for me. We played a fairly short
Vimes,
game.
Right? Yeah.
I was Commander Vimes.
Aside from the tangible, the manipulatives you get in the box.
What do they sound like, Matt?
Oh, you've got plenty of wood.
I've got a huge amount of wood right now. Yeah.
Really correct.
You've got a wood for wood.
17 inches.
There's no sheep in the game.
Tread wood for sheep?
Yeah.
You've got your basic 4 colours.
Do you get a 12-sided dice?
That's just a silly question. Do you?
Of course you do.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Martin Wallace.
He's so considerate in his game design.
Yeah.
The basic colours, red, blue, yellow, green, are your player factions. And they come in minion flavour and building flavour.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a difference between the two of them. The minions are your agents in not exactly a worker placement style, in that they're just more represent your influence on the board.
Yeah.
The buildings, however, when you place those in a burrow, you're able to take special effects. So it could be get more money, it could be get more cards and various other
things.
It's
like you get the deed in
Monopoly. It's
the deed.
You own property. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're a property owner.
Yeah.
You're just a high cut above the rest now.
Yeah, and you get the burrow card, and they're all different as well. So some will give you money, some will give you...
some sort of benefit.
Some sort of benefit.
Now, to continue the examination of the wood components, you also get trolls. Now, trolls are something that will come out when, as a result, direct result of the random encounter deck. Random event deck, sorry. I said encounter. I meant event. And there's also demon tokens. Now, they come out the same way. So you draw... If you decide you're going to play Rincewind is one of those characters, for example, he has the random event icon. So you play that card if you choose to, and we'll get to my favourite part about it in a moment. Mm-hmm. You turn over the event card, and then it might be your buildings explode, you roll a dice, or a fire has started and it's going to spread, or the demons or the trolls arrive. Mm-hmm. You know, catastrophic, not just for you, but for everybody around the table.
Yeah, it can backfire. Random events can affect everyone, including the person whose go it is. So it's not always the greatest thing to do.
I played Rincewind in the game we played, and I had no idea what the random events could be. I didn't look through the deck beforehand. It was just explosion, destroy a building when you roll the 12-sided dice, which they actually included in the box.
Yep.
Wow.
Which that's very considerate.
There's 12 burrows as well.
That's right.
That's great.
It's all about number 12.
But there were no buildings on the board at the time, so it could have been either potentially catastrophic for me or for one of my opponents, or well, in this case, for no one.
Yeah, because the dice decides which building's going to explode. So you roll the dice, land, you got a building in that number,
burrow? It's your own damn fault.
That's it. It's gone. Mm.
The last, well, there's two other components. There's the money, the dollars in 1 and 5 denominations.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's trouble. Trouble is short, black, and round.
Stumpy. Short, black, and round.
Yeah. These are the trouble tokens. Now, they appear on the board whenever you get a mix of more than one color of minion in the same place at the same time. They start trouble. And the unique thing about the trouble is you cannot build in a borough where there's trouble.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like your property value goes down. Nobody wants to invest there because there's too many street gangs or too many.
Because these minions don't get along. They hate each other. They're in each other. Well, although if you have 3 minions in a borough and 1 leaves, the trouble goes away.
Yeah.
So the remaining 2 do get along. But as soon as someone new arrives, it's trouble.
So it seems to me that whoever... in that situation where there are 3 minions and 1 leaves, then the other one was clearly the jerk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's it.
Because the other two will just be going like, I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much it for... the rules. There's a rule book.
There's a rule book.
And we've also said the...
What's the rule book like to get through?
It's very easy. It's
really good. I had a quick leaf through it. I hadn't played the game before today, but I'd had a quick look at the rule book earlier in the day. Very easy to pick up.
Yeah.
The game's described really well. The board is simple. You understand each of the boroughs has its random dice number, the cost to build a building there, and the name of it, which just refers it's referred to on some of the cards.
Sometimes you can get a little bit lost with what boroughs are connected because you don't see the bridges there. But once you figure that out, that's about the only trick to it.
Yeah, and everything else is pretty much on the player guide, reference sheet, which is it's perfect. Awesome. Like I didn't even need to know the rules back to front.
Yeah,
when you draw cards, you just correspond them to the symbols on the guide. So
Probably for me, the biggest point of confusion will be the random event cards. Now, they don't give a lot of detail on the cards themselves, but you can look on the back of the rule book and it gives you an explanation of all those cards and what they actually do.
Okay,
I had to look when the first time I drew a random event card and the demons were popping out, I had to look on the rule book and
see what demons actually
to see what they did, because it was otherwise I had no idea. The card didn't give the clue away. So but I still, it wasn't a huge thing. Turn the rule book over, there it was. We're able to play on. So that's the components. I think they're very nice. They fit in very definitely with the thematic feel of undertone of Discworld. Anyone to pick this up would immediately, who's familiar with the series, of course, would recognise it from the names, the artwork. I think it was very cleverly thought out.
Yeah, the art design on it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a question that one of the listeners had sent in I'll get his name in a second, but there was asking, do you have to be a fan of the books, or have you read the books to play or enjoy the game?
Yeah.
And I would say
no.
As
far as I can tell, this looks like a game that Martin Wallace maybe had designed and he brought to the publisher. This is all speculative, but it seems like it could have been...
No, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could have just brought it to the publisher. They're like, we want to do something with the Discworld thing, make a good board game out of it. And he already had this design and you can just kind of put the on top of
this, Ankh-Morpork is actually the first in a trilogy of Discworld games.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Ankh-Morpork was the first one that came out. Witches is the most recent to have come out. It's just a completely different game.
Okay.
And I have not played that one. However, from what I've found out about it, it's the mechanics are very different. The character, it focuses on a different set of characters. And there is a third...
It's from a different book. I think it's based on a different book.
And then there is I believe it's still, as of yet, unnamed third.
Oh, okay. Game. All Martin Wallace ones?
All Martin Wallace, all set in the Discworld.
Oh,
now,
cool.
There's some very secret... There's a secret pact at the moment, it seems, that if you're a subscriber to the game, and it's to Martin Wallace's company, which I think is Tree Frog Games, subscription base. Yeah. He lives in New Zealand now. So you can... pay the subscription and you get updates on what's coming out. You get first preferences, things like that. And they apparently know what that new next game is going to be, but they're not allowed to say. So
that's going to take weird no NDA. Yeah. That's going to get
I saw that on the forums. People were talking about this third game and some were happy about the direction it's going. Some were not happy about the direction, but nobody would say what it was. So they're very tight-lipped, which I thought was quite, you know, quite interesting.
It was Jason that had asked
Oh, Jason,
question.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd asked.
That's a really good question, though, because the first time I saw this was at someone's house, and they were a huge Terry Pratchett fan. And I was like, can we even... They were like, oh, let's play this game. And I was like, oh, I don't know anything about... you're going to know all the in-jokes and all the references and stuff. And I think it will pay off if you know the books. All the characters are there. Their abilities correspond to something that their characters like in the books. But I don't know too much about the series, and I really enjoyed playing it.
I read the books in about the early 90s, I think. I read not all the books, like the first couple.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't have seen this game until a couple of years ago. And so I'd totally forgotten everything about it. So, it wasn't until, you know, I'm looking over the books just again recently, you know, I see Rincewind and I'm like, oh, that's the main character from the book. Okay. But I've played this game a heap, you know, like you said, there's a card in there and I've read the card, play the card and whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, you're going to have bits that are going to be familiar to you if you know the series and that's going to be fun. But really, it's fun anyway. You know, it's just like having a whole world in a box and you can just open up and play it, and you just, if even if it's, you don't read the books, it's just the game.
I haven't actually read the books, however I have seen the movie the Hogfather.
The Terry Pratchett one with them
and that was quite an interesting one.
David Jason
that's it.
And that had some very interesting characters who I instantly recognised when I started going through these cards. Susan, who is Death's
girlfriend,
daughter, granddaughter, niece, something like that.
You've got a few of your favourite cards.
I have. Susan is. She's basically, she becomes Death, and when
she looks very stern.
She looks very stern. Yes,
not Death though.
A junior sire.
Oh, Death.
Oh, she's
Death. Yeah, she becomes Death.
She becomes Death.
I think temporarily.
The character Death is in the series.
The Grim Reaper.
He's a character.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. It's mad. There's mad stuff. Like, you know, like I said in the introduction, there's Rincewind starts off with some luggage which has 100 legs or something, and it just takes off. And I've forgotten how it works, but it either it knows where it's supposed to be going, and I think it, you know, it just heads off there, and whether you're coming or not. And I think it's very, it complains and gives you pretty much a hard time, I think. So it's kind of interesting. Or he ends up inside or something. I don't know.
It's a sweet transport. Get inside your luggage your clothes and stuff.
One of my other favourites is Mr. Tea Time, or I think in The Hogfather they try to pronounce it Mr. Tea Time. He's an assassin. He's a murderer. He's a great character with a bung eye, and he was played really well in that movie. He's a very interesting character.
Tia Time.
I think it was his chance. It was like Subatio or Tajay.
Or... Dr. Spaceman from 30 Rock. Oh, it's Gene Wilder. His face on the card. Mr. Tiatami.
Who else we got, Matt?
There are a few, some others. Sergeant Colon. Now, any references to the colon or the...
We've never made any of those
references.
We've never made
jokes.
Is humorous.
Right.
Oh, I don't know if that's true.
Sergeant Colon. Anyway, he looks like something that might have popped out of a colon.
I can say we've honestly never explored a colon on this podcast.
So all these cards that you say, they are characters from the world.
I believe they've been directly drawn.
But they have the symbols at the top of the card to let you know what you can do.
So the basic premise of the card is you can do one, all, or none of the actions at the top of the card. So you may be the actions...
What's the hand size?
The hand size is 5. Yeah. So you must have at least 5 cards in your hand at the end of your turn. So throughout your turn...
So that's how you draw cards. You don't draw cards at the start of your turn. You draw cards back up to 5, or if you have more, then you can just keep them.
To start your next turn. But then when it's not your turn, there are other cards that can be played on you that may reduce your hand size. Yep.
Or you can play an interrupt card.
You can play interrupts, So you may be able to put a minion out as one of the actions in an adjacent area, a burrow, to one you've already control. Collect some money. you might be able to play another card. You
might be able to remove someone else's
Remove someone's minion. Remove trouble is another one. Have a random encounter, random event.
I think my favourite one from the short game that we played is you may play another card after this. Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
Yes. How well did that go for you, David?
Pretty good. It went okay.
But what I had this bizarre... I was the first player, and in my hand I had a card which said you may play an additional two cards. Mm-hmm. And one of those was a card that allowed me to place a minion and then draw four random cards from the discard pile. Mm-hmm. So I started a cycle of playing cards, picking up the discard pile, which would include the two cards which I just described.
It was just the turn and went for about 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It was like,
and I was just throwing minions out and just gambling that I'd get these cards back again. Mm-hmm. And, I kind of did.
Because, for quite a while. Because the discard pile was so small that you were just almost guaranteed to get the cards back.
Yeah.
And you kind of went through this infinite loop where you just spread all over the board, just getting an incremental advantage every time you went through the loop. But
knowing that my objective was to cause trouble, I knew I had to get as many guys out that I could.
So put a minion next to another minion, rearrange them somehow.
Keep getting the minions out there. Then
and you were making money every time you did it as well.
But, I didn't care about that. The only thing I thought up there was I was thinking, this is good because then people might get mistaken and think I would cry so praise.
And
start trying to just mine me for money, which would be fine.
I found all I did, I put my hands behind my head, put the cards on the table, hands behind my head, and just waited, just rode his turn out. Yeah. And eventually it was mine.
I've never experienced a goal like that, though, ever.
So good that that's in the player deck. You can have those cool card combos and stuff. And that's what makes me keep coming back to card-based game. It's not card-based, but... a lot of it's on the board, but you have the cards in your hand that you can play in combination.
They manipulate what's happening on the board, don't they?
What works well is if you've got some of those cards, perhaps they're a little bit of a dud card. You don't necessarily... They don't apply to your situation.
Some of them are just blank, literally just filler in your hand.
That's right. They are. Peeled Nuts is one of those cards. A totally useless card that just clogs up your hand.
But when people force you to hand over a card... Give them your junk, and all of a sudden they've got a card which is going to make up five.
It's
and
got
if they
so
can't
many good
discard...
elements of all these other good card games. Like it's got the play cards on top of each other in combination, like Dominion. It's got the passing off dud cards, like in Pit and that sort of thing. And I really liked it.
Yeah, it was. It's good fun.
One of the most important rules of the game is that you must play a card. Okay, so whatever you've got in your hand, you must play at least one card. Mm-hmm. So it forces you to look at what you've got. Okay, what can I do? If it's nothing, then you play the card and you just ignore all the effects and say, all right, I'm playing a card, but I'm not doing any of those things. I'm not going to put out a minion. I'm not going to play another card. I'm not going to collect any money because those are the three most useful things in the game.
It's
get rid of the card.
If you would go through your turn and not do one of those things.
I love the name of this one. I've just got to point it out because it makes me laugh. Moist von Lipwig.
There you go.
I just had to get that out. It's been sitting in front of me. Moist von Lipwig.
Von Lipwig. Oh, this card is ridiculous. It's put a minion in one in an area that's adjacent to one you already have. Take three money. Draw two cards, play another card this turn.
Exactly, and that's what happened to us, I believe.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's a different one.
Unbelievable.
It is a different one. That's one of the better...
It's actually, I imagine that's one of the best cards in the deck.
It's it's one of those ones. It gives you all the options for a player to do. All the actions you could possibly take. And then it gives you the bonus of being able to take two cards from the draw deck. So you can restock your hand without ever... and I've seen it happen where you're just playing cards, you stack your hand up, and then when it comes time to draw up to five cards, you don't need to draw because you've already got your hand stocked.
Yeah.
So, there's no upper limit of cards, but there is the minimum limit of five. Mm-hmm. So that's the player deck.
How to play. What I was going to say, as you were saying, one of the things as you're playing is that all of the win conditions, the objectives on the cards, state, I think they all say if at the start of your turn. So even if you create the scenario for you to win during your turn, you've got to watch it go around the table, which is one of those heartbreaking things. You can see it happen or not.
Yeah.
And I, you know, in that last game, I had 8 trouble counters on the board. And then Aaron removed one by moving his minion out of an area.
That's it. So it's got a backwards and to and fro, isn't it?
Yeah. But then when Matt then created one, you know, anyway, I was like, great, we're up to 9. And then I knew there was a buffer. So at the start of my turn, I had the condition to win. But, you can sweat it out. You can be there or thereabouts and still lose.
No. It's one of the most accessible games I've come across. It's right up there, Carcassonne, Ticket to Ride, and that the ease that you can just jump right in with very little explanation. The player reference card is really handy. Mm. The cards themselves have a lot of the effects on there, so there's no questions about what they do. You can play them.
Yeah.
It just doesn't have the vibe of a gateway game, though, does it?
It's probably about as complicated as a gateway game, but it seems to be one step beyond that.
And I got that feeling from just the flavor, the theme of it, which is like you wouldn't expect a gateway game. You'd expect it to be something pretty generic, in inverted commas, like what would you call Carcassonne, it? Settlers of Catan. But then this one is more accessible than some of those games. And really easy for any player of any level to get into.
Yeah, so it's probably something you could get, but you're probably going to have to twist someone's arm who's never played
to play it the first time.
To play the first time, just because it looks like it could be very difficult. But it's certainly one of those games you sit down and, even if you're an experienced gamer, you can have anybody playing it who's going to give it a try. They'll be fine with it within a round.
That's one of those discussions you can have about how much theme impacts on whether you're going to take to a game or not. Mm-hmm. So, the Ankh-Morpork theme, Discworld theme, if you're not familiar...
Well, it threw Aaron, didn't it? Because you were thinking, I don't know anything about...
Yeah. If you're not familiar with the novels or the world it's built around, then you might be a little bit hesitant. Is this something I'm actually going to enjoy?
Yeah.
You look at Battlestar Galactica, Firefly, Legendary, anything that has been based around a pre-generated world.
Because the Battlestar Galactica game, I've heard, is amazing. Mm. But the thing, until I heard it was amazing, there was no way I was going to buy it. I was like, I'll buy some other thing because I'm not invested in the characters and I'm not like, oh, I got this card. I'm really excited about it. But I think it's good that they're making really good licensed products they've got really good game designers to create.
Yeah.
And it's going outside of that realm. And it might make me want to read Discworld or make me want to watch Battlestar Galactica if I enjoy the feeling of playing that game.
So what would you leap into, I guess? Would you be more tempted by a game that is based on a science fiction Hollywood franchise, or would you be more tempted by something that might have a based in literary fiction? You know, what would you choose, Aaron?
Personally, the literary fiction seems like it could be a little dense for me to just immediately apply myself to. So maybe the Hollywood kind of thing. Like I was really skeptical about the Spartacus board game.
Yeah.
Because it was pretty cheap on the shelf. I read the back. I was like, oh, I don't know. Played it once. Whoa. Like the awesome bidding elements. You bid on like gladiators from the slave market and you pit them against each other and you can bet as your house and have all these secret objectives and stuff. And if it wasn't a Spartacus game and it was just someone's like, oh, I heard about this really good gladiator game. I was like, yeah, that's awesome. But I was kind of maybe even put off by the fact that it had that label.
Yeah, well, we're so used to like reading a book and it's awesome. And then they bring out a movie and it's just dire. You know, it's a terrible, terrible rendition of that story.
Yeah.
I think, if you feel a bit of trepidation about going, it's the same trepidation about a board game that's related to, like you're saying, like the Battlestar Galactica. I've never seen Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
But what would it be? Like, I've seen Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've never played Firefly, the board game, but I'd be like, oh, is it gonna do it? Is it gonna match up?
I love the series. Yeah. I love the series.
Yeah.
So I'm adamant.
Are you reviewing the board game anytime soon?
Well, I think we might get around to it. Yeah. but I myself, I don't know if it's one I would pick up.
Yeah.
Simply because I love the series, and I think the game. Like, Walking Dead did that for me.
I collect the comic. 30 different versions of it. Right?
So I collect the comic.
Yeah.
And then I watched the AMT series.
Yeah.
And I liked that. That was okay. But the comic's still far superior. Mm-hmm. Then they brought out the board games, and I just think they're completely rubbish. Mm-hmm. They're not something that attracts me to that franchise.
But there are several different flavors of the board game.
Yeah.
There's the TV card. Series board game, which is bad. But the comic book board game apparently is quite different. And then the card game is quite different. And there's like four or five different flavors of the one game. And so the fact that they can make some really bad ones and then some really like ones that I've heard about, I haven't played them. Hmm. But the fact that they can just have all these different flavors of these licensed products and you just like... If you see five different Walking Dead games on a shelf, you're just going to kind of pick one at random? Like, what are you supposed to be doing?
That would actually throw me away, I think. Mm-hmm. Seeing five different versions of a similar intellectual property, I'd actually go and look at something else that perhaps doesn't have that kind of coverage. Simply because, okay, are they copying each other? Are they just too different? Mm-hmm. Are they going to...
Did they make a version and then they weren't happy and they like made a...
I'm all for that anyway. I get a bit sick of it. You know, when they bring out, you know, they're doing it all the time now. They'll bring out a movie which is a remake of a movie that we had 20 years ago.
Yeah, Total Recall.
Godzilla.
Godzilla. It's like, why
they
do it?
They didn't come out that long ago.
I mean, there's people around the world making up new stories, being creative, people developing new board games that are completely original. Why can't we do those? They're just like, it just seems to be, let's get something that's definitely going to make us some money or it's going to drag an audience in. But like you were saying, Matt, you know, you can bring out a Firefly board game and it's going to scare you off because you're worried that, well, I don't want to play it and spoil the whole, you know, Firefly vibe for myself.
Yeah, that's it.
So it certainly goes both ways. So why can't we just take the original stuff and
find out in 6 months when we review Firefly,
the Firefly. Matt, we got deep.
Yeah.
We got deep. Yeah,
this is some deep intellectual property board game.
Back to Ankh-Morpork. So I guess there's not much to say. It's such an accessible game that there isn't a lot to say about it other than it's enjoyable. There's a lot of variation in the way you can play. There's a lot of strategy in how you play the game depending on what role. Mm-hmm.
There's and keeping an eye on everyone else.
Yeah, there's that laugh factor just by looking at the artwork, listening to some of the names be read out. Mm-hmm. The screwage factor, which is always good for player interaction.
And that's very present in this game. So not pleasant, present.
It's present, yeah.
It ticks a lot of boxes for me.
Yeah.
This is something that I would definitely get for myself because I like the theme. The components are appropriate. They're sensible. They're
accessible.
Accessible comes up a lot. Now, I guess if you're saying accessible about a game a lot of times, then really it's something that I think is worth the investment. And this is probably one of those. In terms of price, it's medium.
Where is it on the scale?
It's medium.
It's a two on the Aaron Graham price board game scale. The AGPGBGBS.
Yeah,
I played this no problems at all with my 12-year-old.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And she was able to get into the game without any problems whatsoever.
Yeah. So. Whereas we're all like, you can play it with people in your board game group and stuff because you're all trying to. Decipher what the other people's moves mean, whether they're going for this objective or whether they're going for a different objective. Because sometimes two of you can be working towards exactly the same objective.
Exactly.
And then you're just trying to catch each other out and stuff. So, I really liked it from the... from the game I played and just having a flick through the cards and the deck and stuff, it just looks like you could... It's got a fair amount of replay value for one of those middle price games.
Oh, yeah. Like we were saying, the different combos through the cards.
Yeah, like the fact that you've played it a heap and you've never seen it before, just really good.
Well, I played it a few years ago and it was one of those that I was like, I really want to get back to that. And I hadn't seen it around. Mm-hmm. And then, it was actually out of Good Games Distribution. And
that's right. Yeah, you picked it up.
They gave us a game. And that was this is the one that I chose.
Other Dave chose Hellrail 3rd Edition, I think.
Entirely for comedy reasons because we mentioned it on the trains episode.
I think they shipped us another one. So we've got one on the shelf.
Brilliant. Come and grab it.
I think they mistook it for popularity.
They ordered one.
They want one. Here, let's send them more. So I think...
So that was the impact that had on me as far as what do we think of the game is that I'd played it a few years ago, I'd had a couple of years away from it, and then when given a choice of an entire warehouse, I chose Discworld, Hank Moorpork's. I loved it. It was brilliant. And hello to everyone out there at GGD.
Hello.
Hello.
And what about the newest member of the family?
Newest member of the family? Down south, Rockingham.
Oh, my goodness.
Rockingham. Well, this is sponsored by Good Game St. James. I don't know if they're the one that's talking about Rockingham.
I would really like to harbour a rivalry, a friendly rivalry.
Why friendly?
This is new. This is off the agenda. What are you going to throw out there?
Now that Good Games have a second store in the state, I think it'll be good to harbour a bit of a
rival podcast.
Oh, just I think with like accents.
If it's going to be from Rockingham,
south accents, from Rockingham.
The Rockingham accent?
Sure they do. I'm sure they do.
Let's not try to impersonate.
Well, Sarah's working there, so it's like they'll sound like girls.
Oh.
We'll definitely be wearing more denim jeans, and I think
pants. We don't wear pants in the
plaid shirts, not plaid, pledge. But you know, farmers' shirts. Oh, yeah, you know,
right? Yes, they'll be fully dressed, unlike ourselves, fully nude for this one. It's the only way to do an Ankh Morpork.
Hello to listeners in Rockingham.
Hello, we love our friends down in Rockingham. We love them all. All right, here we are with Aaron's top 10.
Here we be.
Aaron's Ankh Morpork top 10. Have you broken it down for
us? I've spun a little further out of the Ankh Morpork range.
Yeah.
We're doing a Terry Pratchett top 10.
Oh, okay.
Terry Pratchett top 10. Yeah.
Terry Pratchett top 10.
Terry Pratchett. So number 10.
TPTP. That's not how you spell top 10 at all.
TPTT. So, Terry Pratchett's top 10.
Terry Pratchett top 10. This one I'm going to turn into a pseudo game for you guys. Because I thought that would be a bit enjoyable for you. So you might want to take some notes with your pens.
We like things that are enjoyable.
Five of these facts are about Terry Pratchett.
It's a top 10.
It is a top 10.
And it's split into five.
No. It's split into 1-10. Five of these facts are about Terry Pratchett.
He's just hitting us with numbers. This is going to get confusing. Can you tell us number 10?
Number 10, okay.
Right.
Should I tell you? No, I've got to tell you the game first, so you know.
Oh, the game. Oh. Yeah, the game.
Okay. This is the pitch.
This is Aaron's pitch for a new game.
Tell me if you don't like it, because then I'll just pretend they're all about Terry Pratchett.
Okay.
Okay, five of these facts are about Terry Pratchett. Yeah. Five of them are about a rival author of his.
Whoa.
I'm not going to say who the rival author is. I think Seven Land Hand listeners
Jack Rowling.
Should... it's not Jack Rowling. Oh, what's he even written?
I don't know.
The other part about a rival author.
Yeah.
If you'd like to write in and tell us who that is, we'll give you a Seven Land Hand badge.
We've got to say which five out of the following ten are actually Terry Pratchett,
and which are about rival author.
Ooh, this sounds interesting.
Cool. All the same.
Are you going to keep score between me and Matt?
I'm going to...
Wow, this is like... magic card quiz.
Yeah, I've turned the tables on you, David.
Wow. All right, here we go.
Discworld David.
I know one Terry Pratchett.
Okay.
Act. All right.
Number 10.
Yeah.
In 2013, Google celebrated his 61st birthday with a Google Doodle.
Ooh, okay.
Jesus.
Yeah, all right.
Is that about Terry Pratchett, or is it about... unknown rival author.
Well, he's definitely a he, so we haven't...
you want us to wait until the end, right?
Let's go to the end. Okay.
Yeah. Number 9.
This one will sound a little odd. Number 9, he has a fossil sea turtle named after him, named Cephosphorus Terry Pratchetti.
What was that again? Cephosphorus.
Cephosphorus Terry Pratchetti.
Terry Pratchetti.
Yeah.
Well, that's definitely not about the other...
Maybe I'm trying to trick you.
Could be.
Right.
That's confusing.
Okay, number 8.
Number 8, he's an active supporter of the Dian Fossey Gorilla Fund.
Okay.
Is he or is he not an active supporter of the Dian Fossey Gorilla Fund? Also, you should be playing this at home, by the way.
Yeah.
Even if you have no idea.
Otherwise, the next 10 minutes are going to be
real
dumb. Laughs.
Yeah, it'll be terrible.
Don't Google it.
7, he plays the guitar left-handed, and he owns over 24 left-handed guitars.
Okay.
Yeah. Who's this? Who could it be? Could it be Terry Pratchett? Could it be one of his rival authors? Could it be J.K. Rowling? Sir J.R. Tolkien. I didn't
number
say that.
Six.
No, that's not real.
Number 6.
When his parents divorced, he was very young. His mother lived in an RSPCA animal shelter for a few years.
Why not?
Wow. Why not? Was it him or was it his rival author? Unknown.
It's a quiz.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. All right.
Number five. Was he so tall in high school that teachers made fun of him and told other students not to meet under the bell tower or in the hallway? They said, meet under Terry Pratchett.
Comedy from teachers.
Tie a yellow ribbon round Terry Pratchett tree.
Fun of him.
That's how that song went, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah. Number one in 1982.
Number four. Random fact.
Does Terry Pratchett have a penchant for wearing black fedoras with a style described as more of an urban cowboy than a city gent?
Urban cowboy.
I don't want to be described as either of those things. He's always a bit of an urban cowboy.
can I hazard? I'm not going to guess, but... Can I... I should wait to the end.
Okay,
give another clue, perhaps.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I know who it is. Author.
I think I know who it is.
Well, you're not allowed to say that.
No, that's what I'm not going
to
say.
It's off-air.
Off-air.
Off-air, yeah.
Off-air, that's what we'll do.
Okay. Speaking of off-air, Aaron.
Oh, sorry. It's all my draft matters.
Number three.
Was Terry Pratchett once employed as a bodyguard to a wealthy Qatari family...
Oh.
These all sound fake, don't they?
They do.
They all sound fake.
I was so confident about a couple of them, and then now I'm... Wealthy
okay.
Qatari family.
Was he once employed as a bodyguard to a wealthy Qatari family? I've got a bit of...
I can't imagine.
Terry Pratchett?
No.
No, he's well-travelled. No.
Yeah.
What do you think he got the turtle idea from?
Didn't he Terry Terry Pratchett or Terry Hatcher? Which... Oh, no.
It's crazy.
Not to be confused.
All right. Knows?
Number two.
Terry Pratchett, does Terry Pratchett or a rival author own a greenhouse full of carnivorous plants?
Wow.
Venus flytraps, other Venus flytraps, large Venus flytraps.
All those carnivorous plants that we know.
Small Venus flytraps.
Hey, we're a games podcast. This isn't botany.
We're not arborists.
Before you write your complaints.
There's that one that smells like meat. A Rafflesia. I know that's a carnivorous plant.
Wow, yeah.
Did you know that? That's knowledge.
That's
for
a fact.
And
that's terrible.
Number one.
Was Terry Pratchett knighted in 2009 and to celebrate, he made himself a sword from iron ore and iron from a meteor?
Wow.
These are all fantastic facts. Imagine if this was one person.
That's an incredible life.
That's
for two people to have led.
Yeah.
So one of them was Terry Pratchett for some of those questions.
Yeah.
And some of the others were rival author.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's say rival.
I've known. I've got my five locked in.
Okay.
Oh, I've actually come up with five too. So,
well, no, well,
that's interesting.
It was five before we started.
I know, but I thought I was thinking I had six at one stage, and I thought, well, where's Emily? I said five.
Yeah,
so
no,
I've corrected
that. Five. Okay. So how are we gonna do this game?
So I'm just gonna go back through it.
So we'll get the Terry Pratchett ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you gonna? And you want us to yell out whether we think? So you'll say, all right,
okay. I'll try and do it simultaneously, or I'll alternate. Okay.
Yeah, we need
honest, a code.
I'll be honest,
okay,
I won't change mine.
Right,
I'm solid that I've got these correct.
Did Google celebrate Terry Pratchett's 61st birthday in 2013 with a Google Doodle?
I'm saying yes.
Terry Pratchett.
You're both incorrect.
Oh.
Incorrect.
Incorrect.
Oh.
Incorrect. Wrong.
Really?
Right.
Does he have a fossil sea turtle named after him? Keep in mind... That if it was the other author's name, obviously.
This is locked in. It has to be because it says Terry Pratchett.
Terry Pratchett.
Of course it is. Yay. Sephosphorus Terry Pratchetti.
Off the mark, Matt. High five.
Yeah, that's one each.
All right.
Terry Hatcher also has a fossil sea turtle named after her.
Desperate housewife, yes.
It's desperate housewifey Terry Hatcheretti.
Shellus. Michelle.
Is Terry Pratchett an active supporter of the Dean Fossey Gorilla Fund?
Well, I had no.
Other author.
It's the other author.
Yeah.
You guys are correct.
He's not a hippie.
Why am I ticking them? This isn't helping me at all. I'm not getting marked
I'm
on
keeping
this.
Score. So far, we've got one.
You guys are one inch. Okay.
You're being tested
number
on
seven.
Your grammar and articulation.
Terry Pratchett. Is he left-handed? Does he own a lot of left-handed guitars? And does he own 24 of them?
I say no.
Other author?
You're both correct.
Yeah.
You're both getting the the things.
So which one did we get wrong?
Yeah, I know.
Which one did you get wrong?
Well, oh, did you say false on the first one?
Yeah.
Oh, right. So
no,
still...
I said it was Terry Pratchett.
Oh,
it wasn't.
So we've guessed the same so far.
Except for the 10.
All right, number six then.
Okay.
Parents divorced.
When his parents divorced, did his mother live in an RSPCA animal shelter for a few years?
Absolutely. Terry Pratchett. Terry Pratchett.
You're both wrong.
Oh, shit. So confident.
This is great. I understand why you do the quiz.
I know, it's awesome.
It's
fun.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
they just go,
yeah. And you know all the answers because you've looked them up.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know nothing about magic cards. All right, number five.
Was he so tall in high school that teachers made fun of him and told other students to meet under him?
Other author.
Correct.
Right. Correct. Well, that's good. That makes the bodyguard one more likely because I'm thinking big, right? So.
This is so random.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
Is his style involving black fedoras and described as an urban cowboy more than a city gent?
Other author. It's too American.
You're both incorrect.
Oh, I get
Terry Pratchett wears black fedoras quite often, as depicted on the inside of his book covers, and he's described as more of an urban cowboy than a city gent.
There's the problem right there. I've never read one of his books, so...
But he's English.
You guys were avid readers.
Yeah, but he's English.
He is
so
English.
Who the hell's a cowboy? Anyone from England's a gent.
An urban cowboy.
Well, I'm thinking of the other collaboration, the collaboration that I know of,
who
could well be rival author.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well.
But, I don't know.
Yeah.
I could be wrong now. That's just thrown everything into disarray.
Right.
Number three.
Was Terry Pratchett once employed as a bodyguard to a wealthy Qatari family?
Never, because he wasn't so tall that they didn't say crown.
I said yes. Terry Pratchett.
Terry Pratchett. Oh, this is the first time you've chosen different answers. Terry Pratchett was not a bodyguard to a wealthy Qatari family. Yeah, David jumps ahead.
Well, no, I've still only scored one.
Didn't you get the so tall in high school one?
You should have
you
five. I've got four.
I know, I only got one correct, which was the fossil sea turtle.
No, you got the Terry. You got that he wasn't so tall in high school. Oh, you're just trying to get the five Terry Pratchett ones.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Does Terry Pratchett own a greenhouse full of carnivorous plants?
Absolutely.
That's
he
another
loves
author.
That shit. No, he's got it.
David's correct.
No.
Whoa, I go in front. I've got two.
Great.
Yeah. And did Terry Pratchett do the most awesome thing when he got knighted in 2009 and make himself a goddamn sword?
Damn right he did.
He did.
Goddamn right he did.
What a cool thing to do.
What an awesome... Well done, David.
Discworld David wins.
Discworld David wins
man,
over more
I go home
McHale.
And cry.
That was awesome. We should do a quiz every time.
Yeah. I'm fairly certain I know who we're talking about.
Right. Well, save that. We might
write it down. Write it down.
Yeah. Okay. I'll write mine down as well.
No.
Oh,
incorrect.
I'm wrong.
No. Wow. You both guessed the same thing. And they're both incorrect.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. Let's maybe the answer.
Wow. That's
maybe the
awesome.
Listeners.
Lovely.
Maybe the listeners can.
I've got a few
this is
friends.
Nail biting. I've probably led everybody else down the wrong path as well if they guess my clue.
I've got a few friends that are quite big fans of the rival author, so hopefully they'll be listening in. Can win themselves a badge.
Oh, yeah, they could, couldn't they?
That was gripping.
That was
exciting.
Which, come back after the blob and we'll read some tweets.
Tweets
from the peeps.
Neats and twos.
The people that are out there that are listening and asking questions.
Each and every one of them.
We actually had a few questions about Ankh-Morpork. Can you believe that? And I wonder if we've answered most of them. But
that means that somebody listened to the last board game podcast. The
one we were leading up to this one.
Yeah.
Plenty of people are listening.
That's awesome.
don't be so surprised, Matt.
No, that's great.
Oh, you're blushing now. You realise that there's an audience. So
that means that you
don't
love
say anything
us.
Stupid.
That means you support us.
They almost definitely love us.
I think they're just collecting evidence. is what's happening.
Yeah.
We've got a question here, which is a bit of research for you to do here, Matt. Or off the top of your head, perhaps you already know this.
I may do. Hit me.
Are the Shades, which I believe is a borough, are the Shades in Ankh or Morpork?
Oh, well, the greatest reference tool here is the board itself.
Oh, which we
have
laid out in front
of
us.
It is clearly broken up into the Ankh side and the Morpork side.
I didn't actually get that. They're labelled quite clearly.
So the Shades falls comprehensively on the Morpork side.
There you go.
There we go.
So, Greg, rest easy. You know where the Shades are now. So if it's a hot day, go to Morpork. Mm-hmm. Right, who have we got now? We've got a question from Dave.
Who's that?
Yeah, just some guy.
Some chump.
Oh, he's gone, who designed the game? Done. We've already done that. Ticking that box.
It was Terry Hatcher.
What else has he done? Already done that as well.
Desperate Housewives, Lois Lane, Superman.
All right, what else have we got? We've got... and Jason, that question we'd asked earlier on, which you'd be interested to know if you needed to know the world of Discworld to enjoy the game, which is... No, you don't.
No, you don't. It plays well, but I think it will reward you if you do know the reference material.
Yeah, I like the way we must be so comprehensive that
we
answered
all
of those without actually having to answer any of them.
In the natural flow of conversation.
Well done.
Fantastic.
Huzzah. Well done. Well done us. Mm-hmm. And one of the other... Now, if you go to Facebook... what's our Facebook address, Aaron?
Facebook.com/7. That's number 7. Land hand. 7 land hand.
Yeah. If you go to that page and you scroll down, you'll find what is it? What's it called? I'm just trying to find it myself now. There's a little arrow that sort of says post to the page. You'll see at the moment there's 5 posts to the page recently. Now after last episode, we have the most awesome post to the page by the Lau family.
Oh, they've just non-stop great content from the Laus.
There's no off switch.
There's no lousy off content from them.
Oh, very good. spell L-A-U.
L-A-U-S-Y,
There's no off switch there's no off position for the genius button,
mm-hmm.
As far as those guys are concerned. You'll find that, I'll read the post. It says, I noticed Ian Lau was hanging out with Jeebus earlier this evening. They were playing a bit of magic and listening to the latest episode of Seven Land Hand. Turns out Jeebus does listen to your podcast after all. And because it was a question that we raised.
I think we offended him a little bit last time, Jeebus.
Did we?
Old Jeebus.
Any lightning happen to you?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I hit my car, though, so it diffused through my rubber-soled shoes.
Oh, well, you're fine. Yeah, lucky
there. Suck it, Jeebus.
But that's the post, but you have to go and have a look
at it. You have to go and see that picture.
Check out the picture. It's a lot of effort there. And a subsequent post... Of Jeebus's hand. Or is it Habus?
Habus.
Habus. Yeah. So keep them posts and tweets coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Just graffitize our Facebook page.
Deface whatever. It.
Yeah, go for deface it.
Tell us your favorite Ankh-Morpork story.
Yeah.
Tell us your favorite Monopoly story and we'll delete it from the page and then you can post your favorite Discworld story.
Tell us your favorite how you managed to combine Ankh-Morpork and Monopoly into Ankh-Morpork-ally.
I Ankh-Morpork-ally this episode than I ever have.
Yeah. All right, all of that and entertain each other during the fortnight to come and get a badge for it.
Oh,
Get a Seven Land Hand badge. Suggest to us any competitions we should run or something like that.
I've got some ideas for upcoming magic stuff, so I think we'll discuss that in the next episode, which is the magic train just keeps on rolling. M15 spoiler start on Monday.
Wow.
So next episode will be in a fortnight's time, sorry.
Mm.
We'll be discussing M15 spoilers, brand new borders, brand new planeswalkers, new mythic rares, all of that's going to be... We're going to have 2 weeks of spoilers from
man, so. Love the corsets.
Oh,
love the corsets.
Yeah.
Is there
going to
be a league in store this time?
Yeah, and
through?
We're going to have an M15 league starting up again with the corset this time.
That's going to be huge.
Which will be a lot of fun.
I love a league.
Just jam your games all throughout the week.
And Matt, what are we going to be talking about on the next theme show in a month's time?
Yeah, next month we're going to be talking about that juggernaut that is Small World.
Small World.
Yeah, I went to that last time. I was at Disneyland. What does that have to do with board games?
It's a small world after all.
It's a world of...
No, you don't know. He's shaking. David's shaking his head. He doesn't know that one. No.
It's a Small World.
I've never been to Disney.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Here in town, in Perth, there used to be a place called Small World.
Yeah.
And it was like a miniatures thing where you walk into the building and everything was small. So
wow,
and it
that's
wasn't just
that's intense.
It's good that they lined those two up. Yeah, like, you walk in there and it's just normal. You go, what's the deal with this place?
It was some sort of attraction. I remember going to it when I was at school, and that was years ago now. So no longer exists. I guess the Small World got smaller and smaller, and then just disappeared altogether.
Disappeared eventually.
Yeah. So anyway,
world.
Small World in a month's time.
Fantastic.
Is it like the one, that church that the guy gets impaled on in Hot Fuzz? You know, there's like a mini village in the village. It's right. like a mini version of the
You're
village.
In the right ballpark.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like a miniature.
We've all played Small World before as well. Like,
yeah, Small World. I right. enjoy so that one inside now. World. Have right. you guys played Underground?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah,
played Underworld.
Maybe I should Underground? Play Underground
no,
to research
No,
it.
I wanted to
yeah.
when I took it to Kalgoorlie. However, playing board games underground is against yeah. health and safety yeah. regulations. So
we even played yeah. the Cursed Expansion as well.
Have you played Cursed Expansion?
Yeah.
I have not played Cursed Expansion.
Ah, well.
This has got a preview of what we'll be talking about in the next time.
What a month we're going to have ahead of us. This is incredible.
So much of the small world.
Any other news or anything going on in Aaron World?
Magic. We had the Super Series 3 qualifier just wrap up. It was won by Craig Chapman.
Well, don't give it away. We'll have to do some commentary first to build the excitement.
It's quite a short video.
Is it?
It's quite short.
Oh,
the games are...
Oh, okay.
Swift.
Right, so we'll have to. All right, we'll have to knock that out this week. Yeah, do our homework.
And that's nothing to say about the actual player's stature.
Oh no,
way,
nothing.
Right?
No, nothing about that at all.
Small world.
Small world.
Small world. Small magic game. Anything else? Buzz around the store, anything like that?
We do have Good Games Rockingham open now.
Yeah,
we've been running some really successful events and stuff down there, as well as in conjunction with Good Games St. James. So.
Yeah, so hello to our Rockingham listeners if you're down there, and get down there. It's a burgeoning magic community. It's building slowly, and I think
with the friendly rivalry brewing.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
According
to Aaron, yeah. have some inter-store playoffs or something like that, no doubt.
Yeah.
It'll be a West Side Story all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
Can we be the Jets?
Oh, yeah, of course. Sharks.
The Sharks?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, we're the Sharks.
Sharks, definitely.
Right.
I haven't seen West Side Story and you haven't been to Disneyland yet.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
West Side Story, isn't that? Anyway. What am I I'm just
it's
sat on, in the corner
it's
now.
It's on in town.
Why we talk about musicals is it, and like is,
yeah,
Disney
is this
World.
Is that the one where like everyone looks like Freddie Mercury and, you know, the leather
That's
jackets
Rent.
And the white? No? Okay. Don't forget everything I said. Matt, any news from your neck of the woods? Any games you've seen coming out on the horizon that you want to mention?
There's one I'm avidly waiting for to come through. Which I would really like to get to eventually, assuming it arrives, Dead of Winter.
Dead of Winter.
The anticipation is building. There's been playthroughs going up online on YouTube at the moment, and this game looks hot.
Okay.
So I'll be
but
looking
it's
out
called
for that
Dead
one.
Of Winter.
Yes.
Mm. But it's
so,
hot.
Well, imagine you're
ice
get
cold.
Pretty hot under the collar.
I'm hot under
when
the
you're
collar,
playing
but
it.
It's outside.
Exactly.
Because it's the dead of winter.
Yeah.
It is so, actually it's been so cold.
Don't play it's it so outside cold. Because you'll get hypothermia.
Soggy board.
Play inside and soggy board syndrome.
Mm.
Yeah. So look out for that one, a dead of winter.
let's blob and come back with Aaron's outro.
Yay. Thank you very much to Discworld Dave. I think that's your nickname from now on.
Is it?
It just makes Who's me think changing? Of you with like a weird
Disco
afro
Dave.
And platform shoes. Yeah,
yeah.
Disco Dave. Okay, Disco Dave.
No,
which,
Discworld.
Which came from Discworld Dave.
Right.
And Malarial Matt McHale, which
yeah,
I think
really,
just rolls off the tongue.
Malarial
Matt McHale.
Yeah.
That's who you are from now on. You'll have to go back to our pandemic episode and listen to that one.
I'll let my wife know that I'm changing my name.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually had a French teacher in England. His name is Mr. Phillips. And he's like, but you can call me...
Bonjour.
The magnificent Mr. Phillips. And we're all like, you're so silly, Mr. Phillips. He's like, no, really. And he showed us his credit card and it said, the magnificent Mr. Phillips on it. And we're like, you're the worst. anyway, about Ankh-Morpork.
Yes.
Who is that author that you were talking about?
Who
did you incorrectly
one.
Guess? Or should we
Neil Gaiman?
Neil Gaiman.
It is I don't know
not
anything
Neil
about
Gaiman.
Neil Gaiman.
They collaborated on Good Omens.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
So Nevermind, Coraline, The Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Oh,
yeah. None of that?
None of these words mean
fabulous
things
fabulous.
To me.
Fabulous writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, what's interesting is I know a bit from World A and World B.
What's World B?
Well, your world.
My
you are
world.
The younger.
Oh, the younger,
the world. Yeah.
What are you trying to say? What are you trying to say about my age?
I'm just trying to say that I've got a bit from A and B. There we go. I'm
deeply offended.
The butter that joins both bread pits of bread together.
Matt's saying he plays for both teams. Is what he's saying.
I'm definitely on board.
Definitely aware of
we that. Did get a little bit of feedback saying that Matt is the glue that holds the me and Dave schism. Is that the word? schism together. So we are very grateful to you, Malaria and Matt McHale, for being here. Thank you for finding us. Let's all touch hands.
Shucks.
Yeah, let's touch.
Okay.
All right. We should just end if we're going to do the touching.
We're touching.
Yeah. We're touching.
Thanks, Matt.
Touching.
Dick World.